Welcome to the Deep End. I am Ahmed, and joining me is my good friend and sports prodigy Mo.
Hello, everyone. How's it going? It's been about a couple weeks, but we're back again, and we do have a lot to get to. We've had African Cup of Nations just ended. We do have Premier League is ramping back up after a hiatus they had. And a couple interesting tidbits about Barcelona transfers. And yeah, a lot of stuff went down. So let's jump right into it. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, let's start off with the AFCON. AFCON was definitely very interesting. The last time we were recording, we were talking about how the product or the quality of play wasn't really that good. And how the Egyptian national team was just god awful. This was, I think, the last time we recorded was after the first group stage, in which Nigeria beat Egypt. And both of us said that, you know, it would be a miracle if Egypt, you know, can make it to the knockout stages. But, you know, here we are on Valentine's Day and Egypt made it to the final.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. Yeah.
We definitely ate our words there for sure.
Absolutely. Not sure what it was. I'm not sure if it was tactics. I'm not sure if it was just a pep talk. Something switched in that Egyptian national team. And, you know, they just kept winning and winning and winning. And not even just winning, like, against, you know, bad teams. I genuinely feel like that Egypt had one of the toughest paths to the final in this AFCON tournament. Four matches in a row reaching to penalties. This includes the final. You have the primary goalkeeper, whose name is Ahmed Shenawy, going down, and you have the backup goalkeeper called Gabaski, you know, stepping in and basically being the player of the tournament. I mean, I know that Mendy technically won the MVP of that tournament, but, you know, Gabaski definitely, in my eyes, deserves it more. And that's not just me being biased, that's me being factual, because, you know, you don't really see these kinds of things happen, you know, these days. You don't see a backup goalkeeper coming in and stepping up and basically carrying the team on his back, you know, game in, game out, always reaching penalty shootouts and always being clutch. It was just really, really insane to see.
Yeah, I think Egypt definitely had the hardest path to the finals between them and Senegal. No disrespect to Senegal, not taking anything away from them. They definitely deserve to make the final, and they did deserve to win. But I think Egypt's story won everyone over, not just Egyptians, but everyone that was watching this tournament. Kind of based off what you said, the goalie Mohamed Shenawy was injured, and then Hamed Aboulkhabel, or Gabeski as he's known now, came on, and he just lit a fire under this team, man. He was saving penalties. He just looked intimidating. Like, everyone going up against him just looked absolutely frightened, whether it's a penalty shootout or a penalty kick that he saved from Mane in the final. This guy just put on a show, and I'm not trying to be biased, but this guy does. I think anyone would agree with me that he deserves to be playing in Europe somewhere outside of Egypt. I mean, after this tournament, he and a couple other guys on the Egyptian team really proved themselves that they deserve to be at much bigger clubs. This is kind of a shame that they're not, but who knows? Maybe now their agents will be getting calls from European teams. Who knows? But to kind of piggyback off what you said about, like, we're not really sure what happened with Egypt. My guess is, I think Salah, from what I've been reading and, like, from what I've been hearing from the players, is that Salah was, like, super vocal this time around. He was, like, he's usually, like, kind of quiet, leading by example. But I think this time around he was super, super vocal, and he kind of, like, led the team through his words and through his play, obviously. He played really well this tournament. I think this might have been maybe, I don't want to say the best time I've seen him play with the national team, but this is definitely the best stretch I've seen him play with the national team for sure.
Because I would probably say the best time for me because,
right,
just I'll go into it. Just, you know, sorry to cut you off. Go ahead.
Oh, you're good. Yeah. So it's like that. I think that really, really helped our team, because the first couple games it was like, ooh, you know, we're not looking too good here, and we might not even make it past like the round of 16 or whatever. But yeah, I think he definitely led, and he just kind of took it upon himself and was like, all right, this is my team, I'm going to take us to the promised land. And he did, came up short, but definitely a very admirable performance by him.
Absolutely. No, I definitely think this was Salah's best stint with the Egyptian national team, because it always looks like, you know, whenever I watch the Egyptian national team play, it always looks like there are things that Salah would usually do at Liverpool in the blink of an eye that you don't really see him doing with the Egyptian national team. We're talking about, like, you know, dribbling past defenders. You know, we've seen Salah dribble past multiple defenders. Defenders that cost like at least 100 to 120 million. I'm talking about the Man City defenders. I'm talking about, you know, Watford defenders. I'm talking about Tottenham defenders. And you go in against these African players who, no offense to them, they don't play in a top league, which means they're not really top players. And you don't see Salah doing the same thing. Like, logically speaking, you expect him to do these kind of things, these kinds of things in front of these, you know, lesser known players. But he doesn't. But during this tournament, we saw him doing it. We saw him give that, first and foremost, that beautiful assist to Trezeguet. What was it, in front of Cameroon?
It was Morocco.
It was Morocco, yeah, you're right. That beautiful assist to Trezeguet in extra time against Morocco. That was just fantastic to see. That was literally the first thing, the first highlight that I've seen from Salah, which kind of made me feel like, okay, this guy definitely cares about the team much more than he did before now. And, you know, to answer your point about, you know, these players, you know, who basically had a coming out party during this tournament, namely being Gabaski. Gabaski, he definitely does deserve to be playing, you know, in a place other than Egypt, obviously. But the problem with that is the guy's old. The guy is, he's 33. He's pushing 34. So, yeah. Like, as a European club, like, is it really worth to make the phone call? I'm not even sure. Like, I definitely would. Because technically I'm biased. Like, I really love the dude. It was crazy to see him watch, you know, just carry the team on his back, because it was, like I said, definitely rare to see. You don't really see a backup goalkeeper, you know, put the team on his back like that. The only other time I've seen something like that was with Mendy, you know, with Chelsea. You know, Chelsea had Kepa Arrizabalaga as their goalkeeper. He was technically the most expensive goalkeeper at the time. I think he still is, even. And they were led by Maurizio Sarri, the Italian coach. And after, you know, couple problems with Maurizio Sarri, Kepa was basically benched for Mendy, and Mendy was a no one. He was a newcomer. He was coming in from like a second tier French team, something like that. And, you know, he just kept proving time and time again that he was doing, you know, fantastic up until now. Mendy is not only the primary, the starting goalkeeper at Chelsea, but he has won, you know, FIFA's best, the best goalkeeper award. He has won the Champions League. He has won the AFCON tournament. You know, he's having himself quite a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing.
Oh,
that...
And now the Club World Cup. I forgot about that. He's also won that.
Yeah, he just did win that a couple days ago, actually. Yeah, and I think that the thing that we like about these tournaments is that we see people coming out in these major tournaments. And that's when, like, the big clubs kind of, you know, have their attention to these players. And like you said, with Gabaski, it's unfortunate that he is older and he did have to wait for his moment, and he waited for it and he took advantage of it. But like you said, you never know. Some of these clubs might take it like, oh, well, you know, he's a little older and whatever, but I don't know. But like you said, it's just nice overall to watch these tournaments, watch these players coming out. Like you saw at the World Cup 2014, James Rodriguez, he came out. That was like his coming out party, this tournament. And then you had at the Euros this past year, Italy, Federico Chiesa, he was a guy that like stood out, had a big clubs calling for him. So, I mean, yeah, it's just nice to see. It's nice to see these players hopefully get their chances. And like I said, there's more than one player on the Egyptian national team that deserves to be playing in Europe. I mean, there's, with all the injuries that they've had especially in the back line, they still somehow, you know, beat Ivory Coast, who has a lot of good players on offense. Morocco, a lot of weapons in Morocco. Cameroon, the host nation that was on fire this tournament, came up short against Senegal, but it's okay. I think these players show that they do, they deserve to be playing in big clubs, and who knows, maybe we'll see them in Europe someday.
You know what, maybe we will. A little bit happy knowing that I at least got one thing correct, because I remember the last time we were recording, it was, like I said, it was still during the group stage, and I had a prediction that Senegal would win, because I feel like they had the deepest team on paper, and I think they proved that also on the pitch. They were fantastic on the pitch. Senegal did end up winning. You know, congratulations to them. It's their first African Cup of Nations title in the country's history, which is really, really good for them. Really, really happy for Mane. Really, really happy for Mendy. Really, really happy for, you know, the other players who put in the work and really, you know, proved themselves to, you know, overcome adversity. And they definitely did overcome adversity in the final. Because if you look at Senegal's path to the final compared to Egypt's, Egypt came in, bro, they came in injured, lots of injuries. They came in tired, exhausted from all those penalty shootouts, and all the extra time. They came in against very tough teams. We are talking about, like I said, Morocco. We are talking about Cameroon. Cameroon could have been maybe the hardest game of the tournament because of other factors, not just talking about the opponents on the pitch. Other factors as well. And Senegal, if you compare Senegal's path to the finals, they, you know, who did they have to beat? Burkina Faso. They had to beat Burkina Faso in the semifinal. They had to beat, not even, like, just comparison, just the names alone of Senegal's path versus Egypt's path, it's kind of laughable even. But, you know, they toughed it out in the final. They gave it everything they had. And they did end up winning in a penalty shootout, so technically it wasn't, like, off of skill or work. It was just, you know, bad luck on Egypt's side. But, you know, they did end up winning. I'm not conceding or anything like that. You know, I'm not going to defend it. So, you know, like I said, congratulations to them. And it was a really, really good tournament overall, honestly. I would gladly eat my words from last episode saying that, you know, the product or the level of play in this tournament is not that great.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely, man. I agree. And then having covered that, then we can, I think, smoothly transition into the Premier League, where two of the most important players in the tournament and do play on one team, and that team is Liverpool. And we'll get to Liverpool in a second here. I just kind of wanted to take a couple of minutes to talk about Manchester United, mainly just because there's a lot going on with that team right now. And it's easy to kind of look at the surface and be like, oh man, like this team, what's going on with this team? They should be doing a lot better than what they're doing. You know, they just got a new manager. They got a good team on paper, but I don't know what it is with this team, but they have just been very disappointing the past few match weeks. Namely, like these two back-to-back draws they've had against Southampton and Burnley. Two matches that they probably should have won. I mean, they probably should have won both of those games, and they didn't. And I don't know if we can start by talking about how Ronaldo hasn't scored in six games. We can start to talk about how Harry Maguire has just looked like it. He doesn't know what he's doing at times on defense. We could talk about how David De Gea is going on saying that they've been cursed. So there's a lot going on with that team. I feel like Ralf Rangnick's approach has been okay. I don't want to blame it on him yet, just because he's new to the team. I don't want to put all the blame on him just yet, depending on how this goes. Oh, and they did lose to Middlesbrough in the
penalties in the Carabao Cup.
Yeah, FA Cup fourth round.
FA Cup, I'm sorry. Yeah.
And they have Atletico Madrid in the Champions League next, which maybe they can slide out of that because Atletico Madrid's
been struggling hard. Like, yeah, this is your only chance to really turn the season around.
Yeah, their form has been pretty dismal this year. But it's just one of those things where it's like, this team has to get it together. I mean, and quick, because they're slipping. I mean, they're slipping to the out of that like European spot. I mean, you know, Arsenal's climbing up. We can talk about Arsenal in a little bit. Arsenal has been climbing up. They do have some disappointing games here and there, but I mean, they're 1 point behind United, and they'll be in the fifth spot. And if United slides down, who knows? Wolves are right there behind them. Tottenham, even though Tottenham probably going to bottle it again, as they usually do. But, I mean, for Man United to be fifth, maybe going on sixth or seventh, that's pretty darn disappointing for that team. I got to say, I just had to start off with that because they've just been super poor.
No, lately. No, you're absolutely correct. I'm actually going to get into that a little bit. It's just so much controversy, literally, from the coaching staff to the players to the level of play. So much is going on with this team. It is actually insane. We're talking about the coaching staff. You know, obviously a coaching change midseason, firing Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, bringing in Ralf Rangnick. And, you know, everyone knows that Ralf Rangnick, like, even if you don't know Ralf, you know that the first thing that comes to mind is going to be gegenpressing, or I'm not even sure how that's pronounced, which is basically just a very strange formation where both center backs are basically playing as holding midfielders, and they just press the ball, just very high defensive line, also high pressing, high attacking, things like that. And when it works, it's very exciting to watch. But keywords, when it works. It's just not working with this team. I'm not really sure. When they were interviewing Ralf Rangnick, like, did they talk about the strategy with him? Did they talk about, you know, the personnel on this team, how it would fit into a system? Or did they literally just go based off of resume and they hired the guy? I kind of felt like they did, which would be embarrassing because we're talking about a top-tier club. We're talking about one of the best clubs in the world. Like, the least you could do is do your due diligence with your team to see if you're going to mesh with this new manager or not. That's the managing portion. The player portion is something else entirely. We're talking about, you know, bringing in Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, you'd think it would be like a storybook ending for Ronaldo. Maybe not winning a title, maybe not winning a Champions League, but, you know, just going out on top in the best league in the world. You know, Ronaldo being Ronaldo, but, you know, Ronaldo hasn't been Ronaldo in a while. I remember seeing a stat a couple days ago saying that, like, he's had one goal since January with at least, like, what, 37, 38 shots on target, which is not Ronaldo-esque at all. Oh. And reading rumors now that he's become disillusioned with life at Manchester United and he's maybe looking towards an exit. That's very unconfirmed, just something that I've read. But does it surprise me? No, it doesn't. Kind of feels like when things get kind of tough for Ronaldo, when things like he, you know, doesn't feel like he can carry the team, he kind of feels like he kind of looks for an exit. We've seen it at Real Madrid after, you know, they won that third Champions League title in a row when Zidane was leaving and all these players were leaving. Ronaldo comes out and he's like, oh, I want a new challenge. You know, instead of staying at Real Madrid, you know, he goes over to Juventus. And then at Juventus, where just it clearly did not work out, he basically changed the DNA of the team. He basically changed the style of play at Juventus. And while Juventus was struggling to adapt to Ronaldo, Ronaldo was also struggling to adapt to Juventus. And when he felt like he just wasn't going to work out, he was like, "Oh, I just want to go home. I want to go to the league. I want to go back to the league where I, you know, started surging, or the league where I made a name for myself." And then he comes back to the Premier League, goes back to United. And since then, it's been a nightmare for him. You know, he's just been controversial. It's been controversy after controversy with this team. We're talking about Donny van de Beek not playing, you know, basically being in Solskjaer's doghouse. And, you know, van de Beek's not even on the team at the moment. He's with Everton on loan because he just needs that gameplay. He needs those minutes. We're talking about Mason Greenwood not being with the team anymore because of obviously what he's done, you know, being accused of domestic violence, among other things that I'm not really going to get into, but, you know, just he definitely looks guilty. we're talking about the defending. We're talking about Harry Maguire, where he's just I'm confused. Where how was this man worth 80 million pounds?
I don't know. I don't know what they saw in him at the time, but it's terrifying why they
paid. It's not even just that, by the way, because he came in from Leicester City, and Leicester City, when he was with Leicester City, he looked like a good defender, not like a world class defender, not like he was like the best comparison I could make. Remember when Arsenal bought Ben White last summer for 50 million pounds?
Yeah.
And everyone was just like, okay, why Ben White? Like, what's so special about Ben White? He's coming in from Brighton, yeah, but he's not even the best defender on Brighton. And he's definitely not worth 50 million. That kind of head scratcher. Mm. That was Harry Maguire coming in from Leicester City. Why is this guy worth 80? And why is he coming in from, you know, Leicester City? Why is he going to Manchester United? There are better defenders on the team.
Oh, yeah, but for sure.
Since he's come to United, he's just been ridiculous. I don't know what it is. Like, you see these highlights where he's just like he just lost out there, and it's confusing to see because like with United, he's awful. But put him on the national team, he'll do a good job. He'll defend well. He'll even score sometimes. But you go back to United, you go back to Old Trafford, and it's just he's a flop. He's a bust. He's just a bust. Like, there is no other way around it. And I hate to use that word, but he's a bust.
No, he is.
So much, yeah, so much going on with United. We're talking about, like you said, draws against Southampton. And Southampton, I don't blame United for this, because if you look at Southampton's recent run of form, they've been more than good. I don't think Southampton has lost in the past couple of weeks, even. They've drawn maybe, but they haven't lost. Their defense has been very, very solid the past couple of weeks. So I don't really blame United for drawing against Southampton, because they've been fantastic. And not to mention Southampton, it's kind of a personal thing to them, because for those of you know who keep up with the Premier League, United beat Southampton last year 9-0 in a regular season game. So, you know, kind of a revenge kind of thing. So I don't blame United for that draw. I do blame them against drawing against Burnley, because Burnley have literally nothing but defenders, and United have a world-class squad. So how they were not able to pull off a victory against maybe one of the most annoying slash worst teams in the Premier League is just questionable at best. And, losing in the FA Cup against Middlesbrough. And Middlesbrough, like, they're a storied club. They have a lot of history in the Premier League. They have a lot of history in England in general, but they're not in the Premier League now. They don't have Premier League quality players at the moment. They don't have world-class coaching like they used to. They don't have any of that stuff. So how they lost on penalties, so strange to think about, so weird to think about. I don't know what is going to turn this season around for Manchester United. I don't know what it's going to take for United to really wake up. But, you know, you just hate to see it. You really do, because, you know, you look at United, the first thing you think of is Sir Alex Ferguson, who in my eyes is the greatest manager of all time. What he did with whole squads, it just really sad to see that, you know, the how far they've fallen from grace since that period of time.
Yeah, it's sad to see what's going on with United right now. And you can only hope that they'll turn it around. But, you know, quite frankly, I don't really have a horse in this race. I'm not a Man United fan, but I would like to see Ronaldo go out a little bit better than this. If, you know, he's going to leave, I'd like to see maybe leave on better terms than this. So, I don't know. Yeah, we'll see what happens with them, but we can kind of segue into their crosstown rivals, Man City, and they've just been like the other end of the spectrum where they've been unbeatable, you know, damn near unbeatable, and just perfect. Everything is pretty much going well for them. Manager's a genius. The players are playing to their full potential and even more. everything's just, they're just clicking on all cylinders right now, and I don't know if they'll be caught. I mean, Liverpool fans will say otherwise because they just always have hope that their team will, you know, will get there, and I don't blame them. Any fan would have hope, but Man City has a pretty good hold on the league right now. So I don't know. I personally think he's current, their lead right now is currently 9 points. Kind of question. Game. The difference between them and Man City is, I feel like when Man City has tough games, they kind of like, they prove that they're champions. They prove that they're the superior team. Whereas Liverpool, we've seen them, you know, get held to some draws in good games. We've seen them in that Chelsea game earlier in the season. They got held to a draw and Chelsea were down a man from that red card. So, I don't know. I feel like when push comes to shove, Man City will probably come out on top, because they had a superior squad. And what's mind-blowing to me is that they're doing all this without a quote-unquote true striker, true number nine, which that just goes to show. I mean, yeah, I love Pep Guardiola. I mean, I'm a Barca boy. I love him. I always will love him. But it just goes to show how much of a genius this guy really is, making it work. Making players like Bernardo Silva, who's quietly having the season like of his career pretty much right now, and Phil Foden, molding players like Phil Foden into a future star. Their defense is just unreal. I mean, Ruben Diaz, you know, Aymeric Laporte, João Cancelo, they're all having amazing years. So, you know, he can give it to you anyway, really. Pick your poison. How do you want it? Man City will give it to you. So, I don't know, man. It's tough. It's really tough. Nothing's certain. I don't want to, you know, speak anything, you know, say anything is for sure, because nothing is for sure. But if I was a betting man, I probably would bet on them, honestly, to win the league this year.
I think I'm gonna agree with you. It's not as crystal clear as everyone is making it out to be, because if we're looking at the league at the moment, I believe they're up, what, I think they're up 11 points or 9 points on Liverpool. 9 points, right? Yeah. They have 63 points, and I think Liverpool has 54 at the moment. What everyone fails to realize is there are still postponed games to be played. So that's something to look at. And Man City have only had, like, I think one postponed game. I'm not even sure if they had any postponed games at all.
They don't.
So, yeah, that's a factor that everyone kind of forgets. I'm not trying to underestimate or, you know, not give credit to Man City. They've, like, you know, I've agreed with everything you've said about them so far. But, you know, everyone thinks that, like, you know, it's already over and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, it's just, it's done. Liverpool have a game in hand, I think. I'm pretty sure. So that would take it to 6 points. Maybe Man City could, you know, have a rough-ish period. You know, I know that's easier said than done because they technically haven't had a rough period this year so far, but, you know, it's not completely out of the question. Do I think it's Man City's title to lose? Yes. Do I think that they're going to win it? Like, it's over? Like, other teams shouldn't even try anymore? No. I think Liverpool kind of had a shot. But, to be fair, Liverpool have to be basically perfect from here on out. It's been 24 weeks into the season so far, I think. Yeah, we're in game week 25 coming into next week. So we technically have, what, 30? That's what, 12 game weeks left? Something like that? Yeah, I think Liverpool have to be perfect from here on out to even have a chance at winning the title. And you mentioned that, you know, they've played really well so far, but they do have these kind of games where, you know, they're held to a draw. You know, they lose. You know, they drew against Chelsea. They lost against, you know, God knows who, I forgot. But, yeah, for Liverpool to really have a chance to win this title, they definitely have to be perfect from here on out. And Man City just have to continue being Man City. Going to piggyback off your comment, like you said, no true striker, no true number nine. The wingers have been fantastic. You know, regardless of who you plug and play at the wing, Sterling has been fantastic. Bernardo Silva has been fantastic. You know, when he plays on the wing, when he plays in the midfield, whatever it is. Kevin De Bruyne, kind of struggling with injuries, but ever since he's been back, he's been really, really good so far. Defense has been maybe the most impressive part of City's formation. Like you said, Aymeric Laporte, Ruben Diaz, Joao Cancelo, who is literally having the season of his life. And he's playing out of position. The guy plays as a right back, and Pep plays as a left back this season. Really, really impressive to see what he's been doing so far. I definitely think that he is City's MVP this year. I don't think that there's a more important player on Man City's squad other than Cancelo, because, like I said, such an integral part of the defense, but also you see him going in and getting assists and getting goals and getting, you know, he's just a complete player. And it's just crazy to see what Pep Guardiola has really done with this team.
Yeah, it's crazy. But again, not shocking to see what he's done, because he does have a track record like this wherever he goes. But Man City do play Liverpool. I think that's something that's going to be like a huge, huge game. Obviously, it's going to be a must win, I think, for Liverpool more than Man City. They can't afford anything less than 3 points from that game. So that's definitely going to be a huge game to keep an eye on. That is April 9th that they will play each other. And kind of transitioning into another team I personally want to talk about, and that team is Tottenham, because they're trending in a very wrong direction, and they're treading on some dangerous waters here, because they, Antonio Conte, I mean, it's really not his fault. I don't want to blame him, because the players, you can't blame him when the players aren't playing up to par. I mean, that last game against Wolves a couple days ago, or yesterday, I'm sorry, that was shambolic. I mean, the way their defense looked, it looked like, I mean, if you and I were playing, we probably could have scored on them. It was comedy. That second goal that they gave up was just absolutely like comedy. The way it ricocheted off the bar, and Lloris couldn't get to it, and the defenders couldn't get to it. And the first person there, Leander Dendonker, the Wolves, he just tapped it in like it was nothing. And that whole game, if Wolves were more clinical with their finishing, that game could have easily finished like 4-0, something like that, 3-4-0. So, and that's not the only game that they've kind of disappointed in. They did lose to Southampton the week before, which was, granted, was a tough game. I mean, Southampton came back and they won. So, I mean, Tottenham almost came back and they won, sorry. But still, it was a tough game for them. And I think they have a lot of these games, which is a huge red flag to me. They lost to Chelsea. Obviously, I mean, Tottenham's not going to beat Chelsea, so that's not something we expected them to do anyway. But still, they need to figure some things out here, because they're treading way down. They're way out of a European spot right now, and that's just now. So we'll see what happens in the next games. But yeah, I mean, that was their first home loss against Antonio Conte. Because I mean, he hasn't been the coach for that long anyway, but still, that was their first home loss against Wolves, and they have harder games coming up. It does not get any easier. Let me just tell you guys their games coming up. So they do play they play Man City next, which I don't think that's going to be a win. I'm just going to say that I don't think they're going to win that game. And then they play Burnley, which they could They could win that game, and they should win that game. Burnley's a bottom half team. And then Leeds could go either way. Everton, I think they'll lose to Everton. Man United, that's going to be the game of, like, two struggling teams, two teams trending in the wrong direction. So, I don't know. I just really like Tottenham. I know I've said this before on this on the podcast. I like their players. I like Antonio Conte as a coach. But, oof, it is not looking good for them. They're eighth right now, and who knows, with a few more losses and maybe teams like Brighton and Southampton keep winning, it might be tough. They could fall to like 10th or like 11th. So I don't know, man. They're trending dangerously right now.
Yeah, they are. This is with Conte at least. This is the first time, because if you know they've lost their last three Premier League games. And this would be the first time that Conte has lost three straight league games since 2009. Which is crazy to see because he's coached a lot of teams since then. So I don't really have a lot of thoughts on Tottenham because they're going... You don't really know what they're doing. You know, they sold Dele Alli. They sold a bunch of players recently. They haven't really brought in much. So you just kind of feel like Conte is kind of building on to his team. You kind of feel like he's trying to hash out an identity for the squad. And, you know, you can only hope for the best for him because Conte is a fantastic coach. I really, really do like the coach. I've liked him for a while. I thought his last season with Inter Milan last season was one of the best seasons, you know, ever because he won, you know, against teams in the Serie A. I know it's not as competitive as the Premier League, but last year the league was more competitive than the Premier League. It was crazy to see. So you can only hope for the best for him. I think he's changed a lot of things with the culture of this team, and you see it with Harry Kane. Harry Kane, he's definitely... I think he's changed his mind about this team. And that's namely because of Conte, because I do remember reading that, you know, Harry Kane is more than open to reopen, you know, negotiations with Tottenham over, you know, maybe signing a potential contract. And compared to last summer, where it kind of looks like, you know, this guy was literally screaming and begging to not talk with Tottenham, not negotiate with Tottenham, it kind of looks like that was just out the window for him now. To see him, you know, kind of go back and, you know, want to re-sign with Tottenham just goes to show you how great of a manager Antonio Conte is. Obviously, there are still stipulations. There are still things that he wants to see from Conte, and that is namely European soccer or European football, you know, European qualification, whether that's for the Europa League or the Champions League, whatever it is, before he can open up talks again with Tottenham. But like you said, yeah, I'm basically repeating everything you said. Great, great managing tactics from Antonio Conte. You know, not trending in the right direction at the moment, but, you know, like I said, I think he's just building his identity with the team.
Mm-hmm. No, that's pretty solid, yeah.
And speaking of European qualification or European football in general, Champions League is back this week. Mm-hmm. Champions League is back this week. As of this recording, the first game up, I think, is what, PSG versus Real Madrid?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
That's Tuesday. Tomorrow, right? Yeah. That's going to be a good game. So many factors there. The first one being, it was supposed to be, you know, the Ramos reunion with Madrid, but it was confirmed couple hours ago that he's not going to be healthy in time to face his old squad. So, you know, just kind of a shame they're not going to see that. It kind of feels like you really want to see how Ramos was going to play against his former club, the club where, you know, he basically gave his everything to, you know what I mean? He was basically the captain, the soul of that team. And it was going to be really interesting to see how it would be if he played against them. But again, lots of other factors, you know, Messi versus Real Madrid once more, We have Kylian Mbappe going to Madrid. That's going to be kind of awkward and kind of interesting to see at the same time because, you know, as everyone knows, Kylian Mbappe wants to go to Real Madrid. Real Madrid want Kylian Mbappe. Kind of, you know, kind of be interesting to see how that goes. Do you have a prediction for that leg?
Yeah, I say 2-2. I think it's going to end in a draw. And I only say that because it's rumored that Karim Benzema is supposed to play tomorrow. And when he plays, Real Madrid are like a totally different team. I watch this team a lot. And with him on the pitch, they're completely different. So I think they'll score. I think it's going to be a tie 2-2. PSG is going to score too. I mean, like you said, I think this might be a Kylian Mbappe audition of sorts for Real Madrid. Maybe he's going to go out there and like kind of play his heart out just so I kind of show him like, you know, if I'm coming, this is what you guys are going to get. You know what I'm saying? So it would have been nice to see Sergio Ramos play against his former team, but regardless, it's going to be a really good game. And yeah, I'm saying 2-2.
That's solid. I think I can agree with that. Only because you don't really know who is going to really have an edge against, you know, the other team. Like I said, so many factors in place. And this is basically kind of an Mbappe audition for Madrid. But yeah, I think 2-2 makes sense. I think Messi is kind of the X factor with this. I feel like if Messi can go back to being Messi, even for just one night, I feel like PSG can pull out a win. But, you know, Messi hasn't been Messi for a very long time. So I don't really know. Maybe there's going to be a change of form because he's playing against a team that he's very familiar with and he knows what the team is like. But, you know, you can never really predict these things. And if Benzema does end up playing, that is going to be a very big plus for Madrid. You know, even having, you know, Benzema at 60% is just better than having mostly any striker in the world right now. Because he's been having such a phenomenal season.
Oh yeah, he's on steroids this season, man. But the second game tomorrow is Man City and Sporting. I think that game's gonna favor Man City heavily. I think they're gonna probably win like 3-0 or 3-1. That's my like generous prediction for Sporting.
Yeah, that's just not. Yeah, I don't really see Sporting pulling on an upset tomorrow, or you know during that leg even. The only thing, I don't really know much about Sporting. I do know a couple of players. I do know maybe a couple of things. But the only thing that comes to mind for me is Pedro Porro. Pedro Porro is a player currently with Sporting. He plays at right back. He is technically with Manchester City. They did end up buying him from Sporting. I believe it was during the summer transfer window. And they just kept him on loan with Sporting until, you know, the summer. So he's technically on loan with Sporting, which is his former club, and he's going to be joining Manchester City in the summer. He's a really, really good player. He has a kid with a lot of potential. I say this because if Pedro Porro plays against Manchester City, maybe they have a shot at keeping it competitive. They won't win, but it'll be competitive. But, you know, if he doesn't play, that's a really, really big hole in their defense, especially at the position where Sterling plays or Mahrez could play. You know, someone's going to take advantage of that. But all in all, no, definitely looks like a cakewalk for Manchester City. Not going to have a lot of trouble with Sporting.
No, I don't think so. And then we'll move on to Wednesday. The first game is Bayern against Salzburg, the Austrian club. I think this is going to favor Bayern too, but Salzburg is not a team to overlook for sure. I think, especially with Bayern's super disappointing result last week against a pretty bad team.
VfL Bochum.
Yeah, I think they're looking to definitely, you know, turn it around. And I think they will turn it around, but I don't see this being a cakewalk either. I could say maybe like 2-1 Bayern. I know they'll win, but it won't be by much. I mean, yeah, probably like 2-1, I would say.
I'd say 3-1. 3-1 makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
with Bayern, it kind of seems like you never really know which team you're going to get. You know, sometimes they feel like they're playing, you know, against, like, it kind of feels like with Bayern, like, you're going to get one of two things. You're either going to get, like, a team that could put up 7 or 8 against you easily, or you're going to get a team that it's going to struggle to hit 4. Like, they'll win, mm-hmm. but they're going to struggle to hit that number. And last week against VfL Bochum, which is a newly promoted Bundesliga side, I watched that game. I don't know what went wrong. I don't think that Bayern played bad. I just think that all the momentum was with VfL Bochum. They had a couple of penalty kicks, kind of questionable, but, you know, I'm not going to argue it. It doesn't really matter much in long term because, you know, Bayern have a pretty respectable league in the lead in the Bundesliga at the moment. And I don't think they're going to struggle much against Salzburg. Salzburg is not, they're not pushovers exactly, but they're not really going to give Bayern a hard time, I think. So, like I said, I think it's going to be 3-1, something like that. Maybe potential to be even more, but because I know that Bayern does like to build a pretty commanding lead in the first leg. So, you know, we can make sure that the second leg goes well for Bayern Munich. So, you know, I think 3-1 makes sense. Maybe more. But, you know, nothing too crazy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's cool. I can vibe with that. And then the second game of that day is Liverpool and Inter Milan. And I think this is this might be the best game. Of the entire week, actually, I think, because Inter is a sneaky team, and they have a very, very good coach. Inzaghi is their coach, former player, and I think they could actually give Liverpool some trouble. I see them, honestly, this might be a bold prediction, I could see them probably winning. I can see them winning, actually. I'm gonna go either 1-0 or 2-1. Again, I mean, I can see Liverpool scoring, but at the same time, what Inter has been doing in, like, the Coppa Italia and in the league too, it's pretty admirable. The Italian league has not been easy lately, and they've been getting some decent wins. They did lose the Milan derby though, but that was a dogfight that game. So, I don't know. Personally, it might be a hot take, but I think I'm going to go 2-1 again, but in Inter's favor this time. Yeah. And it's a home game for Inter. Let me just say that.
Yeah. Home games for Inter, or any Milan team in general, is just crazy. So that's definitely a factor that you can't ignore there. I don't think I have a prediction for this, only because it's going to be, is Mane going to be playing? I'm not even sure. Mane has not played yet since he's won the AFCON tournament, so I'm not even sure if he's going to be fit to play, he's going to be ready to play. Is Salah going to be good to go? I know that he's played technically last game week, but, you know, he played for, what, 30 minutes? Didn't look that well, did not look, you know, good specifically. And I don't blame him. Like I said, lots of minutes, lots of, you know, extra time, lots of penalty shootouts in the AFCON tournament. So it's going to take a while for Salah to really get back into the form that we're used to seeing him with Liverpool. The only thing that worries me is, like I said, you know, Salah's form. Is Mane going to be ready to go? Because Inter do not play around. Inter, they have a fantastic squad. They've been doing really well this season. The Serie A, the title race for Serie A has definitely gone under the radar this season. Because if you really look at the teams there, it kind of feels like it's like a 6-way tie for first place. Literally. Both Milan teams, Atalanta, Lazio, Napoli, all these teams, they're all contenders to win the Serie A this year. So it's just crazy to see how, you know, that league is doing well. But I don't want to get too off topic, like I said. But I do feel like it does favor Inter more. Like I said, I don't really have a prediction, but I just, there's so many question marks, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm just, the main reason actually why I'm giving it to them is just because it's going to be on their ground. And I don't see Liverpool really winning away at Inter. Yeah, Liverpool fans and all the crazies will tell you differently. But yeah, I don't know. I don't see them pulling this off. Anfield, yeah, I can see them winning at Anfield for sure. But this tie, or I mean this leg, I don't know. I don't really see them winning. No, I don't. I'm going to stick with my 2-1.
Yeah. You know what? The more I think about it, there's just so much going for Inter's favor. You know, having home ground, having all their players fit, having all their players pretty much good to go. It kind of does feel like it's Inter's to lose at the moment. But, you know, we're going to have to wait and see. I feel like this is going to be a game to really just wait and see how it goes.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so we're going to end with a nice little Barca segment here. I'd like to take these segments because I'm a Barca fan. I've been a Barca fan for a while, and I've seen my team go through its, you know, good days and its bad days, and now I feel like we're sort of kind of turning the corner. We brought in a couple people in this transfer window, the likes of Dani Alves, likes of Ferran Torres, Dama Traore, and most lately Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang from Arsenal. People know he's been having a fallout with Mikel Arteta, and he hasn't been playing for a while. And then, you know, both sides didn't want it. You know, Aubameyang didn't want to be there. Arsenal seemed like they didn't want to have him. So we gladly will take him, and we need all the help we can get. So we took him, and we brought back La Masia, prodigy Adama Traore. Barca fans remember him and know him very well. Ferran Torres has been okay. He's yet to score a goal in the league. He scored in the Copa. We're not in the Copa anymore. We have been eliminated, but he scored a nice goal in the Copa. His presence is okay. I just feel like he's not the goal poacher that we need after Suarez left, but it's okay. I mean, it's hard to replace a guy like Luis Suarez. So that's fine. Speaking of Luis Suarez, we did play probably our best game. Not probably, definitely our best game of the season against Atletico Madrid. We won that game. That was a must-win game because that propelled us to top four. We beat them 4-2, and we are currently fourth. With, you know, Betis is, you know, their third, but I think we can still catch up to them. We needed to win that last game against Espanyol, the Barca derby, a couple days ago, but we did not win. We tied last minute, which is okay. But Dani Alves, just want to, you know, give him a quick shout out and appreciation moment here. This man is 38 years old, and I mean, these Atletico Madrid players, they couldn't do anything against him that game. He had him in his back pocket. I mean, literally, they just couldn't do anything. It was just astounding. Yeah. And he was doing everything. Yeah. You know, he was assisting on goals. He scored. He did get a red card, but it's fine. He scored in the game. And this isn't the first game we've seen him play well. He's played well in the Copa. He's played well in other league games. And Adama Traore so far has 2 assists. And that's as much as
he had in the Premier League the last 2 years.
Yeah, as much as he had in the Premier League in the past 2 years. So yeah, it's looking good for us. I think Xavi in his system, these players will thrive. And if you've watched Barca, I don't know how many of our listeners, you know, keep up with the Barcelona team, but you can even see Adama in that system just flourishing more. He's more confident. He's playing balls in from the wing area really well. They're on target a lot of the time. He's hardly ever out of control. Like we were seeing him at Wolves, he's hardly ever like frustrated anymore. Like he seems like he has a pep in his step again. As for Aubameyang, he's been brought in as a sub the last 2 games, which is fine. He's just gonna need some time to get used to the offense. I think I'd like to see him more off the bench anyway, because when he comes in with fresh legs, he's very athletic. He still has that pace. I think I'd like to see him more off the bench, and that might be a hit to his ego. But I hope he can take that. I don't know what plans Xavi has for him. But nonetheless, he was brought off the bench the past 2 games. So I think now we're starting to play a little bit better, but still, there's a lot, the glaring issue, and it's going to remain an issue until something is done is the defense. I mean, people like Jared Pique should not be playing, you know, starting a game anymore. I mean, yeah, I get it. He's a Barca legend. He's been at the club for a very long time. But it's like Xavi's trying to play his, like, his friends, you know. He just wants to have like Busquets in the game, he wants to have, you know, PK in the game, those people that he's played with and he's won championships with. But I feel like it's a new day, and these guys have kind of be on their way out now. You know, Busquets is still okay, but PK, he needs to go. And the defense, I mean, Jordi Alba is good, but the rest, I think, in that back line, really, they really, really need some work. And Eric Garcia off the bench has just been, he's just been god awful. I mean, sometimes he just looks like he doesn't even know what he's doing out there. Frankie de Jong has not been good for like probably like a couple games. Yeah, probably like a few games now. He's been looking like he doesn't even care, like he just doesn't want to play anymore. Yeah. And a lot of these Barca players look like that now. But I think we can finish, I think we can do this and finish top three. I think we can. Betis is only, you know, above us by probably 4 points. Yeah, it looks like 4 or 5 points right now. And we have a game in hand on them anyway. So I'm not saying we'll get top two. That's not going to happen. We're not going to catch Sevilla, and we're definitely not catching Real Madrid. But if we get top three, that's a huge accomplishment in my book from how we started this season.
For this squad, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, and Xavi should be, I mean, he should be like coach of the year discussion if, or manager of the year discussion if that happens, because with a squad like this to take that and go top three, I mean, yeah, it's a huge accomplishment. So yeah, I think we've turned the corner. We do face Napoli in the Europa League. This is Barcelona's first time in the Europa League in 18 years. So saying that's a little bit depressing, but hopefully we can pull it off and, I don't know, hopefully win the Europa League. But I think we're trending in the right direction. It's going to take time. So, oh,
go
yeah.
For it, definitely.
Yeah, and also the whole thing with Dembele, him falling out with Barca and the whole contract situation, I think that actually turned out to be a blessing in disguise, because Adama has already, you know, been a lot better than he has been.
He's basically taking his place.
Yeah,
so far.
In like two seasons. So it's fine by me if he doesn't. If he doesn't play anymore.
I mean, it's not even difficult to really take Dembele's spot. Literally, all you have to do is be healthy. So.
Mm-hmm. All you have to do is just be present for the games. But
literally, yeah, just play 90 minutes and you're good to go. You'll take a spot easily. I wanted to talk about a couple things with what you talked about with Barcelona. They're mostly agreeing with you. I find it really crazy to see that that Dani Alves, literally being 38 years old, I remember when he left Barcelona, every single player that stepped into his spot was basically called the next Dani Alves. It was Semedo coming in. They called him the next Dani Alves because of his speed, his crossing, his defending, blah, blah, blah. And then Sergio Roberto, yeah. He wasn't called the next Alves, but he said, you know, he's going to be the next big guy at right back, and he, like, it's worked out well for him so far, but just not like as good as it could be. And then Dani Alves comes back, he says he wants to help the club, you know, he's rumored to literally only be paid €1 a week, comes back, and you see him playing so well, just so heartwarming, very wholesome to see. You know, I watched that goal that he scored last time out, not against Espanyol. I think it was the game before that. That was something to watch. That was something. That was great. You see Adama Traore, like you said, pepping a step once more. He's back to being like the bulldozer that he used to be, the guy that people would be scared of. You know, it kind of felt like recently in the Premier League, they called him a pace merchant, which is, you know, not accurate to Adama Traore. Like, the guy is not only a pace merchant, he knows how to run, he knows how to dribble, he knows how to shoot, he knows how to cross. Seeing him at Barcelona once more, like I said, it was a head scratcher the last time that we were talking about this, but you know, it's worked out well for him so far. Aubameyang, coming off the bench, like you said, yeah, does need some time to really adjust to Barcelona's style of play. But I feel like he could be like in that super sub role if it works out. And it's kind of crazy to talk about being a super sub to Luke DeJong because, you know, Luke DeJong is not like a household name, but his form recently has been fantastic. He's been really, really good the last couple games.
Yeah, I mean, Luke DeJong was also came in off the bench. He doesn't typically start
for us. Yeah, but if we're going to talk about who comes in first, deserves it more, definitely Luke DeJong.
Yeah, I'd say Luke DeJong, over Abba for now, once he gets used to the system, because, you know, as they say, form is temporary, but class is permanent, and I think Abba is definitely the classier player than Luke DeJong. He's definitely more talented, and he's been through a lot more with better teams than Luke, but I'll take whoever's on form right now. Honestly, I really don't care, as long as they play and, you know, they keep winning us games and keep getting us points, move up the table, and hopefully Europa League is next for us. We can win that and get back into Champions League where we belong, hopefully, and start attracting some good talent, because let's be honest, who's going to want to play for, let's say, a sixth or a fifth or fourth even place team, perennial Europa Leaguers? It's not going to attract the likes of Erling Haaland and those big names, so we do need to make some moves also to help bolster our talent on the team.
Nice. Yeah. I think that wraps it up for this episode. Thank you all for listening once more. If you have any questions, concerns, comments, you can always follow us on Instagram. We are at The Deep End Pod. That is The Deep End PODC. And you can also find us on Twitter at The Deep End PD. That is The Deep End PD. We're always like, we're basically almost always on our phone. We're always, you know, replying to your guys' comments, your stories, your tweets, all those kind of things. Like, we are pretty available to, you know, talk, take any recommendations that you guys have, anything that you'd like to see us talk about on the podcast. We're basically almost always there. We're not gonna, you know, make you guys wait too often. And for those of you who are listening, thank you very much. For those of you who have been around since the first episode, thank you very much for your continued support. And anything you want to add, Mo?
No, I think that's good, man. Another great episode in the books, guys. And we will see you next week. Thank you guys for listening, as always. We're out.